MyMac Podcast 143, guaranteed to be a Timless classic.
Not completely.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And it is MyMac Podcast 143. I am Chad Perry here with Guy Searle.
Hey, how's it going, Chad?
And Tim is actually here with us and is kind of quiet right now because he's dealing with bronchitis. So if you do occasionally hear a little coughing, hacking in the background,
deal with it.
Yeah, Tim's trying to deal with it too.
Tim coughed once for no, two for yes.
You know, the thing is, I can't control. I mean, I can control when I do cough, but I can't stop myself from coughing.
Yeah.
I've basically been whispering for the last 2 days, hoping I would get my voice back for the show. Because, I mean, it's a huge Apple week.
I know it is.
We could not have a podcast. And instead, I just sound like a 1987 Demi Moore, so.
You sound like one of those guys in the park that's begging me for money to get booze.
You know, if you could put a little more lisp in your voice, you'd sound like that guy from, ID4.
ID4.
Yeah. Should I tell my mother to move from Atlanta?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, is that Jeff Goldblum?
That's right. There you go.
So, big week.
Oh, my God.
Huge week. And, frankly, I know we... I guess let's hit the nail on the head, first of all. We made fun of the Fat Nan last week.
Yes, we did.
And...
Fat Nano.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though, That crappy picture that was shown really didn't do it justice.
No,
it didn't. It's really, you know, and it probably sounds like I'm backtracking, but it's really kind of an attractive little piece of tech.
Still a Fat Nano.
Except for it's really, really thin when you turn it on its side.
Yeah.
Thin and fat. It offends everyone.
Okay, was anybody expecting video in this or not?
I did. I had a feeling that the Nano was probably the next product to get the video. I think what kind of surprised me, you know, I don't think any of us were surprised at, you know, the phoneless iPod Touch, but what did surprise me was the Classic that they, you know, I mean, after coming out with the best iPhone ever, that they still kept the original form and shape and just gave it mega storage.
Well, let's start at the beginning. The first product Steve Jobs introduced was the iPod Shuffle.
Right. And what we saw with the Shuffle was...
Three new colors.
Three new colors, basically. Yep. And I think the Shuffle is at a form factor now and a design where I think Apple's probably happy with it, and most users are too. I mean, it is nicer than the stick of gum that I've been using, which I've got a one-gen Shuffle that I've been using until I can get my new iPod Touch.
Yeah, that first-generation Shuffle really looks like crap now, doesn't it?
It really does.
It looks like a piece of plastic crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked like a pack of gum.
We do have a big question that Chad Perry's going to have to answer, but we'll go through the iPods first here.
Yep.
So the iPod Shuffle is new. It's still $79.99.
Yep.
It really hasn't changed.
Storage.
1 gig of storage. I'm kind of surprised they didn't bump that up to 2.
Yeah, I am a little bit too. I thought with all the bumps and improvements they've been doing in the other members of the line, but...
Yeah, but does it really need it?
Yeah, I agree.
Probably
with
not.
I mean, using a 1 gig that I've got right now, I can hold the podcast that I want to listen to. I mean, obviously, it's not as nice as having my 30 gig old 3G iPod because that I just loaded up and I'd never have to worry about whether I had space or not. I could just keep adding stuff to it. With the Shuffle, it does take a lot more management. And, of course, using the USB 2.0 connection is brutal as far as updating that Shuffle.
Next one up was the iPod Nano, or as we're going to call it for now on, the Fat Nano.
The fatty.
It comes in 5 colors, if, you know, the silver one is considered a color.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and the silver one's only available for the 4 gigabyte model.
Right, so it's either 4 to 8 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm. My wife loved it.
Yeah, she likes it.
She likes it. She thinks it's really cute and really cool looking, and the fact that it does video, you know, practically amazes her. So yeah.
Now again, but it's a 2-inch screen, 320 by 240 resolution with LED backlighting. which, you know, I mean, that's not really much as far as watching video goes, but considering, you know, the use of a device like this, you know, you're sitting in a car, sitting on a bus, whatever, you whip out this little tiny device, and it is much smaller than the, you know, the former full-size iPods, and you can watch a quick 20, 30 minutes of video or whatever it is you want to watch.
Yeah, but this really, I don't think, is so much a TV/movie-viewing device, more like a, to me, it's more of a YouTube device, you know? Here's some funny snippets that I got off the internet, take a look at them, you know, or if you have a video podcast, then, I mean, it'd probably be worthwhile to watch that, too, because you don't need a heck of a lot of resolution.
Well, probably not, but you could be watching, you know, 20-minute television shows, 20 to 25-minute television shows.
$150 to $200.
Yep.
Yep.
Not a bad price for a neat little Nano.
Yeah, that does video.
It does video.
Yeah, it also has Apple's new CoverFlow UI.
Mm-hmm.
They've increased the battery life to 24 hours for audio and 5 hours for video.
It doesn't look like either the Classic or the Nano is running Mac OS X, however.
No.
It's still the Classic iPod OS.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's basically an update to the former iPod's user interface.
Okay. Now, real quick, do you think the CoverFlow interface was that necessary for the Classic or the Nano?
I think it was just a little more eye candy. You know, they're trying to get as much life out of some of these devices as they possibly can. Not so much with the Nano, but I think the iPod Classic. I have a feeling that the next big go-round, that the iPod Classic is going to disappear, and we'll see, you know, the full-size iPods will be the iPod Touch.
Especially once
flash memory prices come down even more.
Yeah, but still, how are you going to fit 160 gig of flash into something like that price point?
Honestly, how many people need 80 to 160 gigs? You know, I mean, people, you know, hardcore geeks might, but your average person that's just using it to go back and forth to work or to have something to watch or listen to on a plane, they don't need 160 gigs or even 80 gigs.
So the second to the last product he introduced was the iPod Classic.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the silver one. I think it's, you know, it's kind of reminiscent.
The only color they have.
Well, no, it's black too.
Oh, they have a black one?
Yeah. Comes in black or silver.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure? I didn't see that.
And,
you're right. You're right. They do.
I think it's a nice looking. It looks very similar to the current generation.
Yeah.
But 160 gigs. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite impressive.
Yep.
And that's some serious storage. And it's up to the point now where if you put it, you can actually put it in like hard drive mode, and it's useful.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it could be an additional hard drive for your laptop.
Yeah. I knew that. Why? Well, I'm not gonna say I knew, but I was quite certain that the new iPods were gonna be the Touch,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But I was quite sure that they weren't going to do away with the current type of iPods, mm-hmm. simply because of the infrastructure.
It's so built for it.
Mm-hmm. All right. The peripherals out there.
Right.
There's no way Apple wanted to kill that business.
Well, and I think a valid point that you had made last week, just to refresh everyone's memory, is there are advantages to the click wheel navigation system, primarily being it's much easier when you were not looking at the iPod to stop, and find and search through your music.
Yeah.
Well, and this is why I think the Classic is going to go away for the next rendition of all these products, because if they can get like say 32 gigs of memory into a Nano, and maybe make the screen just a touch bigger, would you really really need a hard drive based iPod anymore?
Well, would you want
would
one?
I mean, that's
look at my experience. I had a great 30 gig iPod, and then when that crashed, there was no going back. Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, but I mean, that can happen with flash memory just as well as a bad hard drive. I mean,
true, but there's fewer moving parts in flash memory, so it's less likely to happen.
Yeah, right. That's
plus
true.
Plus, also, flash memory gives you better battery life.
Yes, but I've gone through two second generation shuffles at this point, which just die for no reason.
Yeah.
Your daughter's ones?
Yeah. Yep. And they just die. I mean, they don't get beat on. They don't get slammed into books or anything like that.
That they make, you know of.
And, no, they take care of them. Those shuffles became very important to 13-year-old girls.
Now, did you have the Apple Care for them?
No, first.
Is it even offered?
I don't even. $9?
Yeah. For $80, it's like, I'll just buy her a new one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the point is, I don't think there's probably a higher failure rate for a hard drive-based iPod than there is a flash drive-based iPod.
It'd be interesting if Apple would actually release that data, yeah.
But they would never give that data.
Yeah, they'll never give it out, but...
So, that brings us to the last one, the iPod Touch.
Ooh,
it's exactly what we figured it would be.
Yep.
It's an iPhone and camera-less iPhone.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful.
It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it sitting right here, except mine's called an iPhone. It's a very nice looking unit. It looks just like the iPhone. And one of the things that it's coming with is something that Chad and I have been talking about since we started doing this podcast.
Yep.
And that's being able to buy tunes on the iPod wherever you're at.
Yep.
We've been
sync them back and forth. We talked about that last week.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking about it forever.
Yep.
You can also browse the internet via Safari on the new iPod,
which I think is great, because I know we talked about that last week as well. That, you know, I think Guy was of the impression that it'll be crippleware, and you'll only have access to iTunes.
Yeah. Right.
And I said,
there's no reason.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't Apple put Safari on there? And they did.
Well, and it gives me the three things that I really did want from an iPod, which was a calendar function, a contacts function, Wi-Fi browsing.
It starts.
Okay, so is this more an iPod, or is it more a first shot for a new Apple PDA?
No, this is an iPod.
Yeah.
No question.
What would they have to add to it to make it a full-fledged
PDA? There'd have to be some sort of stylus interaction or some sort of finger writing, note taking, scrawling sort of graffiti software.
And I also don't think Apple is at all interested in the PDA business. And if you look at the PDA business, I can't say I blame them not caring about it.
Yeah, and frankly,
well, smartphones. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chad.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead, Guy.
I was going to say smartphones have pretty much devastated that market to begin with. But if you could have a convergence of some of the functionality of a PDA with an iPod but without the phone, then you know, I mean, there's probably a spot there for something like this device.
How long do you think it'll be before the iPod is hacked? And there's tons of programs, just like the iPhone.
Quickly.
Yeah. Especially since it's basically, you know...
The same thing.
It's almost exact same, probably, you know, OS. So there's no reason why they couldn't take their existing work and just kind of push it over to the other side. Now, what's kind of interesting about that is... Along with all of these new iPods, they're also releasing iTunes 7.4.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
And one of the things that iTunes 7.4 is going to do is break a lot of the hacks that have been created so far for the iPhone.
Maybe. You don't know that.
That's what I'm hearing.
Well,
Especially the ringtones one.
I've got 7.4 and hasn't broke anything yet.
All your ringtones are working? Have you tried to make one since you uploaded it?
Yeah, worked fine.
Okay, well.
But how long do you think it'll be before someone hacks iTunes so it will load any sound file as a ringtone? And do you think...
Probably not long.
So Apple's going to be selling ringtones. They're going to let you create your own, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to pay...
Another 99 cent
for the song that you already own to make a stupid ringtone.
Mm-hmm.
But how much of that is Apple and how much of that is the content providers?
I would say that's 100% Apple, because if Apple didn't care, They would have just made that a little feature in GarageBand.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I would think.
Send as ringtone to iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes. Yeah.
But then wouldn't they be liable for essentially copying part of a song that's protected by copyright?
I don't think so, because you're the one that controls that. I mean,
number one, it's your content.
Yeah.
You're using it on the same device, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to the music on my iPhone.
I think that's a gray area.
Well, frankly, if we did this entire podcast all with, you know, DRM'd music, and they came after us, they would not sue Apple because we did it in GarageBand. They'd sue us because we put it in the podcast and broadcast it.
GarageBand doesn't break DRM either.
No.
So I think that's kind of a moot point.
It wouldn't be the first time.
So, initial reactions, what do you guys think of the announcements? Oh, and the other big announcement, of course, the iPhone has lost the 4 gigs, and it went from $599, which Tim Robertson paid 3 weeks ago today, to
$399. Wow. Are you out of your mind?
that's like, what, a 33% drop?
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I would have expected something like this with maybe a $100 drop. I never would have expected it to be, you know, that severe of a drop.
And that soon.
Mm-hmm.
It's the timing that gets me. I was talking to one of our listeners of the podcast from the UK during the entire keynote.
Mm-hmm.
And we were chatting back and forth. And he asked how I felt. I was really pissed off at first, and I'm still not real happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
There is news right before we went with the show.
We'll get to that.
But, and as I told him, it's not that as an early adopter, I know I'm going to pay more. Sure. I accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. What bothers me is how fast it happened.
Yeah.
Not even 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You don't release a product at that price point that's selling very well. I can understand if they sold maybe 50,000 units and they said, holy crap, we're getting our ass handed to us. We have to slash prices now.
Mm-hmm.
That I could understand. But it's story after story after story on how well it's selling. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs even said during the keynote, we're on track to sell our 1 millionth this month.
Right.
So it's selling phenomenally well.
Mm-hmm.
To knock 33% off the high-end price and stab your early adopters in the back.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that help you grow this business.
Right.
If it had been 6 months after the launch, that's one thing. Even if I had just bought it, when they did it, if it would have been 6 months after the launch, I could have accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
But 6 weeks after the launch is a really hard pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was happy.
Yeah, I know.
I was very pleased about it.
That was the first thing my wife said. Is like, oh, Tim's not going to be happy about this.
So you guys go ahead and read. Well, no, wait a minute. Before we get to anything else, an important decision. Something we've been talking about on this podcast for a couple months now. A decision had to be made to repair a broken iPod or to wait for a new one to come out. Chad Perry decided to wait for a new one to come out. A new one has come out, Chad Perry.
Yes, Tim Robertson.
What will it be?
Are we going with a $300 Touch iPod or a $250 to $350 classic iPod? It'll hold more of your music, but it won't have that cool iPod smell. Or is it a Nano?
We know where this is going. I already told Kim, because she said, so when are you going to get your Touch? I said, well, as soon as we can afford it, I'm going to get my Touch. We're going on vacation at the end of this month, so not this month, but frankly, as soon as I played with the iPhone, just like Tim, we were at the Ann Arbor Apple Store, I was hooked on that interface. And frankly, I said, even though I don't have a need for an iPhone because my work pays for my cell phone. If I can get an iPod with this kind of functionality, I would really be an idiot not to go out and buy one. Because it's just, it's addictive and it's cool and it's, it makes you feel like you basically pinched Captain Card's communicator while he wasn't looking, you know?
You feel like you're using something from the future.
Yep.
And everybody else around you is just freaking clueless.
That's right. Well,
sheep, lemmings.
Yep.
You see someone with like a Sansa and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Who did what? You piss off?
Really? Well,
and you know, the Wi-Fi browsing is fantastic. And yeah, I can do a little bit of browsing even with my PSP. But frankly, the PSP is not a good platform for doing that.
No, it sucks.
And it has memory problems. I mean, you get on certain web pages, it's just like, I can't handle this. Turn down the memory.
Right. Know? It's not a good machine for that.
No, it isn't.
It's a great game machine. System. Right, but that's, you know.
But I think for a convergence device, the Touch iPod comes a lot closer. Not to where the iPhone is, granted, but for what it does, it's a fantastic media device.
Do you miss the fact that it doesn't have a camera or a phone?
No, because I don't want those things.
You don't need to? I found that I really started using the camera much more.
Yeah?
Yep. I actually kind of like the camera on the iPhone.
Yeah?
For what I use it for, quick snapshots.
Mm-hmm.
What have you been taking pictures of?
Whatever, you know. If I didn't bring the actual camera and we're somewhere and I want to take a picture of something, I'll take a picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to take a picture of Chad's dog right here. Hold on. Hold still, Casey.
I smell an email.
And, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to post it with our show notes. Casey, look at me.
Oh. Being uncooperative.
No, good picture. Yes, I took your picture. And so anybody
you stole my soul, Tim. Give it back.
Go up to the podcast show notes, and you'll see a picture of that.
You got to use her picture as the ID3 art for this show.
You think so?
Yeah, why not?
Maybe. We do have
.com over top of it.
We do have a David Cohen coming up here in a little bit. Fenestration is back.
Excellent.
So we don't have to have another visit from fake David Cohen.
Is it the real David Cohen?
It is.
Too bad,
because
I think
David
he had something important to say about this whole iPhone price drop.
But. We're gonna jump into the rest of the news in a minute. Let's get to some reader feedback first.
Right.
Chad?
Yep. Let's go ahead and pop open what we've got, because I know we do have a couple things that we've received. And I will obviously read them.
Yeah, because you know, it's not going to work for me right now.
And this is from Brian. Brian writes, hey, Tim, first off, I'd like to say I love the MyMac.com podcast. You guys do a great job and, for the most part, mirror my views. I also like to say that I am not a Power Mac user. I'm lucky I can turn it on and off to do what I do with it. I have an eMac G4. It's great for what I do. I was waiting for Leopard to come out before I updated from Panther. However, a couple of episodes ago, you guys were remarking how well you think Tiger was.
We should also mention that we got this on August 30th. That's going to be important in just a minute.
And there really wasn't any reason to ditch it, aside from getting the new OS. On that recommendation, I decided I should just bite the bullet and upgrade now and start playing with the things that I have been reading about and listening to for a while now. I gotta say I'm loving the widgets. They're probably old hat by now, but oh well. I was in the market for a new keyboard and heard you talk about how much you love your new one and was able to buy one at the Apple Store in Tyson's Corner. And I gotta say, aside from having figured out the volume keys yet, I absolutely love it. I love the feel of the keys. I also got a Mighty Mouse, and I love it. And finally updated my dying G4 fourth generation iPod. I got a 30 gig video.
Oh.
Of course, 2 days after I got the rumor went out that Apple was going to announce the big 6 gig iPod next week.
No, sixth generation
iPod next week, excuse me. I'm not sorry, though. I'm having fun right now converting movies for viewing. I'd also like you to know that a couple of months ago you were talking how a friend wanted you to make a slideshow for a funeral and how easy you were able to do it in iMovie. So I decided to try it. My first project was making a slideshow of 4 years of pictures of my daughter, and I gotta say it turned out really well, especially for a first attempt. I was able to add music, and it only took 3 hours. To sum up, I'd like to say thank you for the work you're doing. It inspired me to do things that I did not think I could do or even enjoy. Keep up the good work. I know I'll be a subscriber for as long as you put the podcast out, and that's from Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Yes,
Brian emailed me back, and because we all knew an new iPod was coming.
Yeah.
And One of my replies to him was, I kind of wish you would have let me know you were thinking about buying all this. Mm-hmm. And I would have told you to wait at least a week or two.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, putting aside the iPod Touch, mm-hmm. there's really nothing that the new Nano or the Classic can do that the old iPods can't.
Absolutely.
As they both play video. Mm-hmm. They both
and games.
And games. And more importantly, music, mm-hmm. and listens to these podcasts.
Yeah,
he won't have
important point,
but and he won't have CoverFlow. But realistically, CoverFlow is neat, mm-hmm. but you're not going to use it most of the time.
No.
So, I don't blame him a bit. Mm-hmm. The new keyboards, I still like it.
Yeah,
I'm really, really still digging that new Apple keyboard. Mm-hmm. I'm really used to it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I. It feels, you know how I was saying that the iPhone just a few minutes ago, that it feels like it's from the future and that we're using something from the future. The new keyboard kind of feels that way too.
Huh.
It doesn't feel like the same old clunky plastic keyboard I've been using for the past 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
So thanks very much for the email, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Brian.
Dan Rodriguez,
Hey, I haven't heard from him in a while.
Yep, we got audio from him, so let's drop that in here real quick.
Hello, Tim, Chad, and Guy. This is Dan Rodriguez from Michigan. Just wanted to give you my feedback on the Apple announcements. I don't know. I've got mixed feelings. I certainly feel bad for you, Tim. You just got the iPhone about three or four weeks ago, and it's down to $399. I'd be a little ticked off, too. Also, I don't know about the looks of the Nanos. They look a little weird. I don't know if they, fat Nanos or whatever they are. They just don't look right. I think the really good value is on the iPod Classic. And I think that Apple is really getting bad with introducing all these different models. They're getting kind of Microsoft-ish with so many versions of a product. But I think overall it was an exciting event, exciting announcement. The iPod Touch, wow. I think it's great, but I can't help but compare it to the iPhone. And to me, it's like, hey, for $399, you might as well just get an iPhone. And I think that's what they're thinking is to get people the option of getting an iPhone without the phone and making the iPhone price attractive so that they can sell a bunch of them. I think they're not, honestly, I don't think the iPhones are selling as good as they want them to. So they're thinking, let's lower the price and let's get it down for the shopping season, for the Christmas season. But overall, I think it was a good announcement. And love your show. Keep it up, and I'll keep listening. Bye.
I heard what they said, but I'm still gonna walk.
Thank you very much, Dan. Interesting.
Yeah, and I like the theme music there, too.
Yeah, that was kind of neat.
Definitely appreciate the audio feedback, Dan. And I think you made a valid point with the price point drop for the iPhone and the price of the upper model of the iPod Touch.
Pretty darn close, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know, though. The big difference, really, is if you're already with AT&T, it's really a no-brainer to go with the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, or, you don't want it,
don't need
it really doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
It could go either way. It depends on each individual's
mm-hmm.
needs
or wants.
Or, yeah, there you go. So, man, that audio quality was awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
He sounds better than I do. We should just have Dan do the show.
How hard would that be right now?
Well, yeah, but No, we should have Dan on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Next one up is from Eric Osaki. I really probably need to stop talking.
Yep.
I'll let you read this one, Chad.
And Eric says, first of all, thank you for the podcast contest and my brand new WhatsApp. For Guy, I will have a picture in the future with the WhatsApp and the malasada that he mentioned on the podcast. Regarding your prediction from podcast 142, I think you guys were very close to being correct and close to my own feelings and your reactions to the rumors. I saw the iPod Nano online and rumor sites and was not impressed. I'm still not impressed after the announcements, but I have yet to see one. Currently, I have a second-generation Product Red Nano and did not get it for video, whether or not it was offered on it when I purchased it in December. I was looking for either a video iPod, iPod Classic, or the at the time rumored widescreen iPod to replace my third generation iPod when it decided to stop working. As of right now, it is still going. The fat iPod Nano reminds me of the cute keychain video games, the Tamagotchi from the 1990s. I'm just not interested in it. Thanks for a great show. Mahalo, Eric.
Sweet. Yeah.
Yep.
That all we got?
Malasadas, just bring people together.
Always. Why don't you guys get into the news?
Yep.
And I'm going to let my vocal cords rest for a little bit here.
All right. Guy, you want to kick us off on the news?
Yeah. Let's talk about the latest letter from Steve Jobs.
Which made me happy.
Made a lot of people happy. Steve Jobs had written another open letter because he was probably getting slammed like crazy, like right after they announced the price drop, or Apple was getting slammed like crazy. So he sent out this little letter that you can go up on the Apple website and read it, and I'll start off, and you've got it there in front of you.
Sure do.
Okay, so why don't you take it after the
sure, we'll just swap on and off paragraphs.
Okay. To all iPhone customers, I have received hundreds of emails from iPhone customers who are upset, no kidding, about Apple dropping the price of the iPhone by $200 2 months after it went on sale.
After reading every one of these emails, I had
observations and conclusions. Excuse me. I had a cough there. Yeah, it sounded like something else. It's just a cough.
First, I'm sure that we are making the correct decision to lower the price of the 8-gig iPhone from $599 to $399, and that now is the right time to do it. iPhone is a breakthrough product, and we have the chance to go for it this holiday season. The iPhone is so far ahead of the competition, and now it will be affordable by even more customers. It benefits both Apple and every iPhone user to get as many new customers as possible in the iPhone tent. We strongly believe the $399 price will help us do just that this holiday season.
Second, being in technology for 30-plus years, I can attest to the fact that the technology road is bumpy.
Bumpy.
There is always change and improvement, and there is always someone who bought a product before a particular cutoff date and misses the new price or the new operating system or the new whatever. This is life in the technology fast lane. If you always wait for the next price cut, or to buy the new improved model, you'll never buy any technology product because there is always something better and less expensive on the horizon. The good news is that if you buy products from companies that support them, well, like Apple tries to do, you will receive years of useful and satisfying service from them, even as newer models are introduced.
Third, even though we are making the right decision to lower the price of the iPhone, and even though the technology road is bumpy, we need to do a better job taking care of our early iPhone customers as we
no shit. Oh, excuse me.
With a lower price. That cough is getting to you. Our early customers trusted us, and we must live up to that trust with our actions in moments like these.
Therefore, we have decided to offer every iPhone customer who purchased an iPhone from either Apple or AT&T and who is not receiving a rebate or any other consideration, a $100 store credit toward the purchase of any product at an Apple retail store or an Apple online store. Details are still being worked out and will be posted on Apple's website next week. Stay tuned.
We want to do the right thing for our valued iPhone customers. We apologize for disappointing some of you, and we are doing our best to live up to your high expectations of Apple. Steve Jobs, Apple CEO.
Oh, is that his job?
Yes.
I think his email is a step in the right direction. In fact, if that's all they offer, I'm more than happy. I wouldn't I wouldn't have been upset had they only lowered it by $100.
Mm-hmm.
But over 30%.
Yeah.
After 6 weeks, $600 to $400 is a huge difference. It mm-hmm. really, really is.
Yeah.
And it really, really pissed me off. $100 I can live with.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, and yeah, it's they're not giving me cash back.
Right.
They're still going to keep my money. Sure. I have to pay it. You know, spend it in an Apple mm-hmm. store. But Apple happens to have a product coming out next month that I kind of want.
This is true. And it runs
$179 probably.
Yeah.
So.
What? Leopard?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or is that the price that they're talking about online? Is $179?
That was the last thing I heard.
Hmm.
They're usually $129.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't they normally $129 for those or not?
I've been hearing $179.
Wow. That's a boost.
It is. But either way, if I could save $100 off of it, I won't be so upset.
Yeah.
Right.
So, next news item.
The next news item is the little spat that Apple is having with NBC.
Yeah, what the heck's going on with that?
Well, NBC apparently made some pretty high demands from Apple, and some people might say it was justified since they accounted for about 30% of the video downloads from the iTunes Music Store. But what they essentially wanted was they wanted to have variable pricing and the chance to bundle different shows together for a higher price, you know, like old stuff and new stuff. Mm-hmm. And they also wanted their video content to be DRM'd even heavier than iTunes currently does. Something like to not be able to play it other than on your iTunes. Other than on your iPod. Mm-hmm. So if you are one of those people that, you know, download, say, a Heroes episode to watch through Apple TV or on your computer, or if you wanted to, you know, have it go from your computer to your TV, well, NBC doesn't want you to do that.
Mm-hmm. Which,
so,
hey, guy,
go ahead.
Look at your camera. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, he's going a little crazy with the iPhone, so.
Oh, well, you know, you make allowances for six.
So what was Apple's response to this then? Obviously, NBC wants to name its own tune in iTunes, it sounds like, to some degree.
Right. Well, Apple wasn't having any part of that and basically told them, you know, no, we're not going to do this. So in turn, NBC said, okay, well, when our contract is up in December of 2008, we're not going to renew it, thinking that, you know, Apple would cave. And instead, Apple said, okay, well, then we're not going to hype or sell any of your new fall shows. And from, you know, and it's just been a back and forth kind of thing, and God only knows where it's going to end up. But I think the real loser here ends up being NBC, because, mm-hmm. you know, what they wanted to do, and, you know, and this isn't all on NBC. Apple had said that if they had gone through with the price increases that NBC was requesting, that the episodes would have gone from $1.99 to $5.99.
Wow.
But I'm assuming that you know, whatever percentage markup that Apple puts on to the $1.99 one, that they were just increasing that along the way. So if they were making, say, you know, 20% of $1.99, now they're saying, okay, well, we're going to get 20% of $5.99.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, $4.99. It wasn't that NBC was saying, we want you to sell our videos for $4.99. They were saying, well, we want this price point, and Apple is saying, okay, well, with that price point, they're now going to cost $4.99.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we'll have to wait and see what happens. But the weird thing is kind of what happened after this is that NBC is starting a new service. I think it's called Hulu or something along those lines.
Huh.
And they're, you know, they're going to be having most of their shows on there. And as well, they've teamed up with Amazon's Unbox service. But the weird thing about that is, well, number one, it doesn't work with Macs.
Mm-hmm.
But the really weird part about that is that, do you know what the price point is for the videos that they'll be selling on Unbox?
$4.99?
$1.99.
Oh, good Lord.
Right.
So they're going, you know, to Unbox with Amazon and selling it for the same price that they're getting at Apple right now.
Right. and not having nearly as many downloads because everybody with iPods can't
use right.
It DRM so heavily. I think you need it's some kind of plug-in, I think, for Plays for Sure or something along. I'm not even going to pretend I understand it all the way, but you know, most of the people that have been downloading their shows through iTunes won't be able to watch it anymore.
You know what?
They're not going to buy another player or a different player just to watch NBC shows on a small digital device.
You know what seems to me is NBC is pretty freaking ungrateful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying Apple's motives were altruistic or anything like that, but there's a little show that NBC is writing very heavily now called The Office.
Right.
That was an actual bomb on television.
Mm-hmm.
And a little online distribution system called iTunes single-handedly resurrected and made into a massive, massive hit.
Mm-hmm.
All that seems to be lost at this point. No one seems to remember that.
Yep.
Well, they don't care.
You're right.
But they're seeing the almighty dollar, and
But they're not going to see the almighty dollar in the long run with this type of attitude.
No, they won't, because frankly, I think, you know, CBS has its own service that does this too.
Yep.
I don't know anybody that uses
so
it.
So does
though.
ABC.
Yeah.
Well, you could always watch.
And for the most part, they're free services.
Mm-hmm. Well, and NBC has stuff that you can watch right online. Yeah, they're streaming. Right. And I've used them before. I was getting caught up on 30 Rock.
Mm-hmm.
But it would show you, you know how they have the breaks where the commercials go?
Yeah.
Right.
It would only load up to that point. Mm-hmm. Then it would load a whole new web page with the next part on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would show you advertisements. And that was fine. Right. Well, you know, but it didn't cost me anything.
Right.
And even if it would have been, and I think even if it was at the time in iTunes, I wasn't going to spend $2 an episode. So to be quite honest, I really don't care what the hell NBC does.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't care what Apple charges for these shows on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
If Apple feels like it's too much, so what?
Yeah.
If NBC wants it, let them have it. Mm-hmm. Because you know why, Apple? Nobody will buy them.
Let the market decide.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
They'll go buy Grey's Anatomy instead for $1.99.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Apple cannot have complete control over price on other people's content.
Mm-hmm.
Apple's going to have to get a little bit more flexible in that. You know, there's some other big players. But there's a lot of other big players out there who could come in and knock Apple's dick in the dirt at any time. Let's not assume that Apple's such a big boy that nobody else can do that.
So what's Apple trying to defend here in this whole NBC dispute? Are they trying to defend the DRM, their right to determine the level of DRM that goes on on what they distribute, or are they trying to defend the $1.99 price point for television ads?
I don't know.
Ooh. No, neither do I.
I think only Apple and NBC really know that.
Yeah.
So that's our segment this week. We're going to jump into Fenestration with David Cohen. He's talking about iLife 08 and how that's working on the with integrating with PCs.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back next week. Hopefully my voice will be back next week as well. I'd really like to get more into the conversation, but be sure to check out our show notes.
Yep.
We'll have a couple pictures up from today's episode. Not a lot of new content on the feature side of my Mac. I haven't posted anything.
Because you've been sick.
I've been laying on my back.
And he hadn't even eaten a patty.
That's right.
But thank goodness we've had plenty of blogs from the blog site and all the writers that have posted stuff there. Bill Palmer, Donnie Yankolo.
Bill Palmer posted a lot of stuff this week. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
And, check out mymac.com. And, thanks for listening to our segment. See you later.
See ya.
Thanks, Guy.
No problem.
Thanks, Chad.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Easter Bunny.
Hello, my name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Hello, and welcome to Fenestration 36. In today's session, I'm going to discuss the new iWork 08 applications. As you'll have probably seen from the press releases that accompanied the release of iWork 08, the application suite now contains three applications rather than the previous two. Keynote, which is a presentation program, Pages, which is a word processor and desktop layout program, and a new application, Numbers, which is a spreadsheet application, but like the other members of the iWork 08 suite, Numbers has a special focus on presenting numbers and printing numbers out, as opposed to just using them for calculations. Now, as regular Fenestrations listeners will know, I have an Intel Mac that I use at work with the Microsoft Office suite and Windows XP in order to provide support for my office activities. We are a big user of Microsoft Office in my company, and so it's always important that I get a good compatibility. However, when iWork was released, I thought I would really throw myself in the deep end and actually try and use it relatively exclusively for a day or two, and I was pleasantly surprised. When I looked at the first projects I had to do after installing iWork, I had to create a spreadsheet. Now, normally what I would do is do this in Excel and then spend a fair bit of time representing the numbers after I'd generated them into something that I could put into a Word document. But with iWork 08, I didn't have to do that. What's nice about numbers is that rather than have a complete blank set of cells like you do with Excel, you actually get a sheet with nothing on it. What you then do is drag out a series of cells in the form of tables, and these tables can refer to each other and can link together. From a presentation point of view, if you want to present some calculations to somebody, this works really well, because what you can do is you can take the various different tables you've created and arrange them very nicely on a page. There's all sorts of nice templates that allow you to make the thing look very presentable, really. And then you can export that document as an Excel file or a PDF file so that they can read it. What I actually did was I created a numbers document with all my budget calculations presented very clearly, annotated it, put everything on that I wanted, and then created a PDF. I was able to then send that to my client, who could confirm the numbers that I generated for them. When it came to inserting that spreadsheet into a document, I took the PDF, opened it up in preview, saved it out as a JPEG, and I could then insert that directly into a word processing document. So it was a really easy and simple way of creating a very good looking spreadsheet. Now, often when you present numbers to a client, they want to see the spreadsheet behind the numbers so they can check the calculations for themselves and possibly to make changes. I tend to build assumptions into my spreadsheet, which I mark up on the top left, so that if the client decides they want to change those assumptions, they want to change the number of people I've assigned to a project, for instance, or they want to change some of the pricing that I've put into a spreadsheet, they can do that and see what that does to the overall numbers. So to do that, I need to be able to give them a document in Excel format. Now, I found that I could create a document in Numbers and then save that out as an Excel spreadsheet. But what it did is it took all my tables that were presented nicely on a single page and put those on a separate Excel worksheet within a single document. You could then click on the tabs between them. Now, this makes sure that your calculations are retained, which of course is what you want. But unfortunately, what you've lost in those circumstances is the summary that you've got from the Numbers document. Effectively, I had five tables presented on a single page, whereas in Excel, I had five tables presented on five separate worksheets. They all worked together, but unfortunately, there wasn't a single view. It was actually relatively easy, though, to insert an extra worksheet into the Excel document, and using formulas actually copy the numbers that I'd generated to a new table that looked something similar to the summary numbers document that I'd sent to my client. So in fact, it actually worked fairly well. And knowing how Numbers actually exports an Excel spreadsheet beforehand, you could probably do something in Numbers so that you wouldn't have to do that extra step after you created the Excel document. What I was pleased to find, however, though, was that if I took an Excel document and opened it up in Numbers, it opened and it worked really well. Obviously, if the Excel spreadsheet contains something that isn't supported in Numbers, Numbers has a subset of the Excel functions, then that's not going to work. And any VBA macros that might be in the Excel document are lost because Numbers doesn't support them. But I really was surprised in how well Numbers was coping with the Excel documents I dropped into it. And the kicker was that, in fact, it was opening documents that were created in Excel 2007. Now, previous listeners of Fenestration will know that Microsoft has really dropped the ball in supporting their own Windows product within the Mac version of Microsoft Office. They've released a very weak set of filters that are only in beta and convert only Word and PowerPoint documents into something that can be opened on the Macintosh. Now, they've been complaining that it's actually really hard to do and that the document formats were only finalized very late by their Windows colleagues. But the fact that Apple has been able to deliver this in their own competing product that doesn't directly support the underlying Microsoft code just really shows that that's actually not very honest of Microsoft when they say that. It's a similar story when you look at Pages. Pages has been substantially improved in this version of iWork. In the previous versions, it was very much focused on the layout and desktop publishing functionality, and word processing, in a way, almost took a backseat. You could drop text into it and make it look really, really good, but Pages wasn't the first program you might reach for when you wanted to create a new document from scratch. Not so in this version. They've created a whole set of extra functionality and templates that support pure word processing much in the same way that Word does. Again, on the file compatibility side, I was able to open quite complex Office documents created in Word 2007 natively in Pages, and from what I could see from my own documents created in my own business, pretty much all of the formatting was there. I couldn't see any problems. In addition, if you have get sent documents that are created in Word 2007 or earlier on the Windows side, and they have advanced features like tracked comments and tracked changes, those are also supported now in Pages. So this does mean you can actually create a workflow where a Windows user creates a document in Word, they might annotate or track changes on it, and then send it to you. You can open it on your Mac in Pages, review those annotations, approve and accept them, and maybe add some of your own, and then save the document back as an Office document back to the Windows user so they can open it in Word. You've got the complete round-trip solution. Now, again, just like with Numbers, Pages always was a complete master program when it came to presenting very nice documents very quickly. And again, I've seen this myself. I took a plain text document that had been created by my wife for something we needed to do for our son for school, and I dropped it into a Pages template, and within about 10 minutes I had a document that looked like it had been created professionally. It really was that easy. The fact that you can now create documents in Pages from scratch, just using the normal word processor functions you might be used to in Office, and then turn them into something that looks like absolute dynamite for presentation to a client, means that I think Pages really has reached true maturity in this version of iWork. Again, in Keynote, Keynote always was the master of doing exactly the same thing, creating presentations that look completely different to anything generated in PowerPoint. And with Keynote iWork 08, they've really gone to town again. There's a whole load of new animation functionality that really enable you to do some amazing transitions and animations on top of your slides that can add some real punch and some real dynamism to your presentations. Again, PowerPoint support is there to and from Windows programs, including the 2007 version. I've not spent as much time with Keynote as I have with Pages and Numbers because I don't do presentations at work that often. But certainly I have done a little bit of testing with it, and again, Keynote was able to open presentations created in Office 2007 and earlier with some quite complex formatting and transitions on, and they seem to work fine in the Macintosh version of Keynote. iWork 08 really is an impressive piece of software, and what's also more impressive about it is they've included this Office 2007 round-tripping to and from support. And they've done this in a program that really costs very little money compared to a copy of Microsoft Office. $79 or £55 is all it costs, which really is nothing. You could pay that for a shareware version of just one of these programs and be very happy, but the fact that you've got all three in the same bundle really is a complete piece of value. Now, of course, I have to caveat everything I've just said in that, you know, as with all of these things, there may be certain things in your particular organization's documents that cause you some problems. So, you know, you're never going to get completely native support. But hey, you know what? Microsoft aren't doing that either anymore. So you're not really losing anything by sticking with iWork rather than Microsoft Office. Certainly what I have felt comfortable doing is deleting Microsoft Office from my Intel Max hard drive. I basically rely on the fact that I've got Windows XP and native Office if I need it. But most of the time at the moment, I'm working in iWork 08, and I'm finding it perfectly fine. Certainly, if you're buying a new machine, you've got the demo version of iWork already on your hard drive, I advise you to take a long, hard look at it. If your Office needs are relatively straightforward and you want to create just good-looking documents quickly, iWork will certainly do everything you want. And you have the satisfaction and comfort of knowing that you can open and save Microsoft Office documents for sending to Windows users if you so desire. Certainly, if you're doing a very heavy or very business-critical document exchange with Windows users, I would recommend you buy an Intel Mac and you run Parallels or VMware and a copy of Windows XP and Office 2007. But if you're not able to do that or you don't have the funds to do that, iWork 08 is a worthy alternative, and it gets my highest recommendation. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.